It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood. The Sapura were once one of the largest tribes in the Amazon region of Ecuador. But by 1980, anthropologists considered them extinct, their culture erased in less than a century by disease, assimilation, and violence. What the academics didn't know was that about 200 Sapura remain hidden in the jungle. Among them were five people who still spoke the native language. And after Peru and Ecuador resolved a 60-year border conflict in 1999, a few more Sapura were discovered in Peru. This group had already lost its language, but among its numbers was the last living Sapura shaman. In 2001, the United Nations declared the Sapura a masterpiece of the intangible heritage of humanity and awarded them $70,000. As part of the series Worlds of Difference, producers Alan Weissman and Nancy Han traveled to Ecuador to see if one shaman, a few aging native speakers, and world recognition can save a dying culture.
A young man, his face cross-hatched with red paint, circles beneath a thatched roof, beating a drum made from a hollowed palm trunk. The dawn mist rising from the forest canopy carries his drumbeats to neighbors up and down the winding Rio Conambu, tributary to the upper Amazon. He's calling the neighbors to his village. The occasion is a minga, the Amazon equivalent of a barn raising. Today, the men will clear a field to plant cassava, but the minga must first begin with food and drink. Off to one side, Sapura women are frying catfish and perch. From a stew pot juts several boiled monkey paws. Everyone is served a ceramic bowl filled with a milky alcoholic brew. This is chicha, prepared from cassava pulp the women chew first to make it ferment. Rarely do Sapura drink anything else, including water. While her granddaughters sip chicha and weave flowers in her long hair, Ana Maria Santi sings in the old language. She recalls that when Sapura ruled these forests, they considered monkeys their ancestors. But Quechua people who invaded from the highlands now dominate the Amazon. It was the Quechua who taught them to eat monkeys, and it is the Quechua language she must use with these children.
After Sitsanu escaped the turtle's house, he went to the house of the jaguars.
Ana Maria tells them the legend of Sitsanu, the first Sapura shaman, who traveled through the forest learning from all the animals, always escaping before they could eat him.
There were many, including a sick jaguar cub. Sitsanu said to its mother, "I am a shaman. Give him to me." Sitsanu saw his mouth was full of thorns. He took them out. The jaguars invited him to dinner.
It's a tale the old ones want the young Sapura to hear, because today their people inhabit a modern jungle populated not just by bats, jaguars, and piranhas, but also bureaucrats, anthropologists, oil companies, tour operators, evangelicals, and other indigenous groups. Get too close, they warn the children, and the Sapura could get devoured. A few gallons of chicha later, the men take up machetes and attack 4 acres of copa palm, laurel, and magnolia trees. Afterward, they'll burn the stumps, then plant cassava and banana. Each plot is good for just one harvest before the forest soil is exhausted.
La chacra es del Cesario, mi tío.
It's for Cesario, my uncle. Just enough for one family. You eat maybe 3 or 4 months. Then drink more chicha and have another minga.
Gloria Yushigua is the daughter of the last Ecuadorian Sapura shaman, keeper of their wisdom, who died in 1998. As the forest crashes down, she and the women gather palm fronds to weave baskets. Gloria explains that her hunter-gatherer people didn't always slash and burn the forest.
Before, we only ate forest fruit and hearts of palm. We made chicha from palmito. But when my father was about 10, Quechua people came and said, "What do these people eat?" The next time they brought cassava, banana, corn, and gave it to us to try. We said, "Where do we get it?" So they showed us how to clear the forest.
The Quechua brought more than cassava. In the early 1900s, sapara were enslaved by rubber companies with Quechua collaboration. Thousands were chained to trees and forced to tap latex till they died. As sapara numbers depleted, Quechua invaded their lands and slaughtered many more. War between Ecuador and Peru divided them further. Finally, to survive, the remaining sapara adopted the language and customs of their enemy. Many married into the Quechua and other tribes, but a few kept their sapara identity hidden. Cesario Santi, Gloria's uncle, sits on a log near a fire pit. He plays a two-hole flute made of pingullo, a hollow vine his people fashion into blowguns to hunt tapir and peccaries. At 78, he's too old to hunt, but suddenly his people are depending on him again. The fate of the sapara world has come down to him and three others.
Yes, only me and my sister are alive, and two others. All my grandfathers are dead. We're the only pure sapara left.
So Cesario, his sister Ana Maria, and the two other remaining sapara speakers are trying to hand their knowledge to the next generation before they die. UNESCO has given the sapara funding to rescue their culture, beginning with their language. There's now a school where the old ones are advisors. But the only trained teachers available are Quechua. To preserve their life within the forest, sapara are now faced with learning the world outside of it.
That night I heard a bird come. It sounded like a flute, like the old men play. It was very sad music. I knew my father had died.
Bartolo Ushigua, brother to Gloria and son of the last Ecuadorian sapara shaman, listens to rain drench the city outside his office. Just 26, Bartolo is now the leader of his people.
Our old ones tell us that the first sapara who created the world, air, insects, and plants by shouting them into existence explained that one day the sapara would disappear. The language, the people, the territory. When my father died, the people said the culture had to die now. There's nothing to maintain it.
But sapara are guided by their dreams. And years before his death, Bartolo's father dreamt that the prophecy could be defied on two conditions.
We had to defend our territory and save our language.
To do that, he knew, the sapara must learn the ways of those who could destroy them. So he built an airstrip in the jungle, knowing it would attract missionaries, but also that his children would be able to reach the city to study and someday lead.
The night I dreamt he was dead, he told me, here are the things that have to happen. You have to take the responsibility. Don't stand still. Go as far as you can.
Bartolo had already gone far. In Puyo, capital of Ecuador's Amazon region and the center of its oil industry, he studied Spanish, learned to eat city food, and to tolerate cola in place of chicha. His knowledge of the forest won him work as a tourist guide, then a scholarship to France to study botany. Then, in 1998, a man was found walking in the forest. He was a sapara shaman from Peru, he said. He was looking for his relatives.
So we knew there were others in Peru. The old ones kept saying the culture had to die now. But we said, why can't we try to keep it going? If we lose culture and identity, we'll be a world without history. In a dream, my father told me, he talked to the ones long dead in the spirit world. They agreed.
¿Están de acuerdo?
Peace with Peru had revealed the sapara's existence. Other indigenous people in Ecuador now recognize them. But Bartolo Ushigua realized the sapara needed to form their own organization, lest they be swallowed by their neighbors yet again. They had no money for offices, for telephones, for travel. But then came the UNESCO prize. For a week now, the forest monkeys have grown noticeably fat, and the favorite Sapura delicacy, live grub worms, are now abundant, both signs that the rainy season has arrived. But this night is clear. Bartolo Yoshigua's sister Gloria sits by the fire in the Sapura village of Handiaku, facing a young woman. The woman is pregnant and has a migraine. The woman closes her eyes. Gloria holds her head between her palms and blows tobacco smoke over her face and chest. She repeats this until the woman's migraine vanishes. Gloria also went to the city to study, but now she is one of three Ecuadorian Sapura training with a Peruvian shaman. Her 15-year-old cousin, Blas Santi, who lives across the river, is another shamanic apprentice. He has just completed his tobacco training and next will study ayahuasca, the sacred hallucinogen of the Amazon. Blas says he doesn't mind the discipline, like fasting on tobacco tea for 5 days, then eating only green plantains. But something else worries him.
Pretty soon they'll probably kill me.
In the past, many shamans have died, killed by rival shamans from other tribes who bewitched them. Every Sapura knows that Bartolo and Gloria's father died that way. That's not supposed to happen anymore. In recent years, Ecuador's Indians have united against their common adversaries. But there's one that no tribe has been able to resist, and the tiny Sapura are about to meet it. Among the Indian peoples of the Ecuadorian Amazon, oil has often brought sorrow. In barely 2 decades, the Cofan Indians were nearly wiped out, and the Sequoia and Siona reduced to a fraction of their numbers. They blame disease and the poisoned water and soils left by Texaco and Petroecuador. But in recent years, oil has become more of a trade-off.
En estos tiempos, somos petroleros.
These days, we are oil men. We are working with foreign oil companies for our community's benefit.
Eusebio Mayancha heads a Quechua Development Association.
We realize they may be deceiving us, but we have no other choice. We are forced to continue with the oil companies. We want to civilize ourselves like any human being. We've accepted that to get jobs and money, the only way is oil. But if there were a foreign foundation that supported us to preserve the forest, we'd finish this business with oil. We'd say no to oil, no to oil. If foreigners come here and say, we'll protect 100 or 300,000 hectares, we'd be so happy knowing that they were going to pay us to preserve the forest and leave poverty behind.
In exchange for drilling and building roads into their forest, the oil companies give his organization $700,000 a year. The Sapura got one-tenth that amount, and just once, from UNESCO to preserve their language, people, and culture. But there's also their territory, and one reason they've survived until now was that their land along the Rio Conambo was the only place in eastern Ecuador without an oil concession.
But the world is coming into the forest, to us. With nothing, what can we do when they attack? Just words won't be enough.
Ecuador's official indigenous groups, including the newly rediscovered Sapura, all have autonomy over their land, over the surface, that is. What's below it belongs to the nation. The Sapura have won recognition, but they now live atop a drilling agreement with an Italian oil company.
They have power and money. They don't care about us, so we want to raise awareness and money to stop them. There's no other way. Some tribes have taken up arms when they didn't have enough money. But we're so small, they kill us in no time.
The road that runs to Eusebio Mayancha's Quechua oil village is now headed their way.
The highway is already very near. We'll have to make a stand. It's come to that point.
The United Nations has designated the Sapura a World Cultural Treasure. It gave them a small sum for that honor, then left them to see whether four old native speakers are enough to resuscitate a culture. But Sapura leaders wonder whether another kind of treasure the world prizes so highly, petroleum, will engulf them and their forest home before there's time to find out. For Living on Earth, I'm Alan Wiseman.
Our story on the fate of the Sapura in Ecuador was co-produced by Nancy Han.